trouble sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Punkonomics, your weekly talk show that talks about everything underneath the sun and then a little bit more. My name is Jesse Velez. I'm your co-host, and our host is Dr. Benjamin Ballack, who is standing right next to me playing with his toys.
Stop playing with my toys. I'm charging my toys. Huh?
Charging your toys, that's right. So, we got a few topics, and I'm actually going to be hiding in a booth. They want to interview me for my particular show at night.
Your alter ego, you're more musical, friendly.
Yeah, so I'm not responsible if Dr. Ballack goes crazy here, so.
I think I went crazy. I think I went crazy sometime in the mid-80s, you know? So that's about it. I'm actually clawing my way back to sanity, and it's scary.
Hey, you cut your hair again.
No, yeah, I gave myself a self haircut actually the other day. Who knows?
Okay. I thought I was just saying things.
Okay. Shaving.
Shaving.
I should shave it all off.
You know, you should shave it on the sides and just kind of leave like a mohawk.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yeah, okay. I'll think about that.
Yeah, you went from Wolverine to, kind of like Clark Kent now, huh?
Oh, give me a. Wait, I almost cursed. Alright. You're baiting me.
I know. So we have some guests today.
Yeah. We have actually, important topics going on, and happily, my network of local troublemakers and rabble rousers, specifically repeat guest Rich here, yeah, came back and kind of started talking as I was locked up in my office trying to work through promotion stuff. Never mind. Let's just not talk about it even. About what some people are following and more people should, and that we are topic, trade agreements, and these guys are doing, in a minute I'll let them introduce themselves, as usual, follow-up information will be coming on, punkonomics.org, which sends all that information to all the social networks that I use, including Facebook, et cetera, if you want to follow up in more details. And the organizations that our guests are involved with, et cetera, et cetera. So you can follow up. But, it's all about the TPP. We'll talk about name for this, back in when I was studying the communist, countries. It's the nomenklatura, list of names and terms. So they're doing local activism about it and hooking up with national levels, and we'll talk about big picture, and there's a lot to discuss, and it's happening right now as we speak in Washington DC and beyond. There, enough of my rambling. It's so big I should just shut up at this point and ask our guests to tell us as much as they want to tell us about themselves and start telling us about the topic, and as usual we'll add a little bit from there.
There we go.
I don't know.
Hi, I'm my name's Rich Hilwig. I'm with the Orlando Life Brigade in Speak Up Florida. The Orlando Life Brigade, we do LED light board messages, spell out different issues that we are concerned about, try to inform the public, hand out flyers, talk to as many people as we can, do actions at specific places to, best accentuate, or places that we can get the most people driving by or viewing, or the most people we can talk to. Right now, really for the last 3 years, we've been working really intensely for a lot of that time on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, Fast Track, the Trade and Services Agreement, and the TTIP, which is the
used to be TAFTA, the Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement. I'm not sure what the new initials stand for completely. Maybe Carolina can help out with that. But
yeah, I can do some looking up. But yeah, right. We joked about it as we were like getting a coffee of how the names, all these acronyms sometimes can just kind of be another way.
Yeah. And with Speak Up, just because it's very related to what we're going to be talking about today, we're working on the campaign to end the new Jim Crow. Obviously, you're familiar with that. Free trade agreements and this neoliberal version of globalization has had a tremendous impact in, on the new Jim Crow and a lot of the policies, shutting down factories in the 70s, gentrification that goes on still today. So these things are all very intimately related. So, but yeah, that's me.
I'm Carolina Griffith. I also work with the Orlando Light Brigade. That's really what I have spare time for right now, and I really don't have much. I am a mom of three. I've been been watching the Common Core debate for several years now, and it does tie in with this trade deal issues as well. And I've been concerned for quite some time on the background I have. A lot of the clients I work with, their employees not only have 401ks, but they have pension, they have retiree health benefits. They're a small minority of what's out there, and they struggle to buy their medicines, feed their family. And it just struck me working with those folks, with the 99%, that if that's the situation they're in with all those benefits, what's my mom going to do with her little 401k? So I've been concerned since 2000 watching mergers and acquisitions and doing my own research on what led up to the Depression. And for the last couple years, the Light Brigade, we've been on and off because of personal issues, but we have been working on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we're finally at the line in the sand. It's been drawn.
Yep.
And today we're going to see if Congress is going to, if the Senate will pass that line, or if we can continue to fight TPA, or if now we have a 6-month campaign to educate the public about these trade deals.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, so there you have it. So first of all, just to say, right, I mean, you know, these people around here, I mean, especially Central Florida, right, and Florida in general, we're not exactly considered the radical center of America or particularly politically active. And a lot of people are understandably, I suppose, certainly are disillusioned, right, with electoral politics, certainly. But all that is changing, isn't it? There's a renaissance in Florida, certainly in Central Florida, and all different angles, and a lot of the causes and issues that were just mentioned briefly we've devoted entire shows to in the past roughly 2 years, a little bit more than 2 years we've been on the air. So to some it would be familiar, to others not, and there we are. Okay, but a prime focus, trade agreements, though. Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be like, I don't want to embarrass you, but the fact that you're talking about how everything's interconnected is something that is, to me, I mean, a daily facepalm as a social scientist, well-trained in America, that people don't realize this. And even if they realize it in theory, they'll, okay, yeah, I guess things are interconnected. Sure, they don't take it to understand how that impacts the way the world works. It's a humongously... it's a huge hole that is very debilitating to many people. So, this is a battle. And, frankly, let me start with the negative. So hopefully we can build our way up to a bit more of a positive perspective, right? Mm-hmm. In some sense, it's a lost cause. Like we were talking again a few minutes before, because, you know, we get together, we immediately start talking about this stuff, even if we're not on the air. But, you know, we can't really win this one, hands down, even if it's defeated, almost. It's kind of, it'll allow people, politicians will turn around immediately to get political capital out of that defeat one way or another. But the power structure remains. The agenda is on the table.
Right. And we talked about that, you know, touched on with the alphabet soup of bills. so they don't get it passed as TPP today or tomorrow or by January. But it's coming back. It's not going to go away. They've spent 10 years on it. So they'll put a brand new name on it. Just like today's vote in the Senate is TPA, which if you go, which is historically been known as Fast Track. If you go research Fast Track, you can't find anything positive about it. So today's name is Trade Promotion Authority. And that's what the Senate will be voting on today. Initially they were going to vote on it early and now they've pushed it back to 5:30. So if you haven't called your senator yet, we've got a couple more hours here before they cast their votes.
I'm sure. I mean, yeah, that again, and that absolutely, could be helpful. Again, it's not like, when we lose this one, do not be discouraged, because, you know, I mean, putting up a fight is already better than believing this.
Well,
and
I
most
mean,
Americans
and,
don't.
And here's the don't. Thing, you know, I've researched a lot of the history from, you know, my own information on, you know, free trade and these things. And, you know, there's congressional reports from 1967 where they very first, you know, started pushing this through, and basically calling the multinational corporation the ideal steward to, you know, take care of the most people on the earth. But in order to do that, they needed to be able to straddle national boundaries and stuff like that. And well, we see since then what's actually happened in the areas that, you know, these free trade agreements have been enacted, decimated Mexico's agricultural sector. They were flooded with cheap, imported food, ran millions of people off their, you know, ancestral land because they couldn't afford to pay for food that they had always grown themselves. Put them in border factories, you know, when factories closed here, you know, when we lost jobs, they went right to the border factories. And then, you know, when those factories closed down and went over to China, now you have millions of people that are displaced off their, you know, ancestral land, no job, no opportunity. What can they do? Maybe join a cartel to take care of their family, maybe try to sneak across the border, and then look who they're met with once they do that. You know, and say they do get across, what are their chances? Become a migrant farm worker, which experienced some of the, I will say it, the worst working conditions in the United States with zero federal labor protections. They work in slave-like conditions, many exposed to pesticides, 16-year-old pregnant women having birth defects. This happens all the time in those sectors. And then when they, you know, when there's too many to, you know, work on the fields, then they just hold them in detention centers. And then the private prison industry gets to take their pound of flesh out of it too. You know, so that's how these things all work interconnectedly. You know, NAFTA was enacted and, you know, people here suffered, people in Mexico suffered, and then they pit each other against ourselves saying, oh no, they're just trying to come up and take our jobs without showing the economic causes that we imposed on them through free trade agreements such as NAFTA.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, absolutely. It's a point really, and I'm sure we get more into it. What we call globalization that needs a lot of unpacking, because it's another racket. It's what happens to Mexico is what's been happening to ex-colonies since the World Wars, or since the end of colonization in the 60s, and before that. That was happening in a different way. It's almost a natural place that people go. We're not a particularly, I don't know, noble race, humans. We have to fight hard to not be scum. And in fact, if you look at the long history of humanity, that's really it. You know, when things are better, it's because people are really fighting kind of against our nature.
You touched on it, like with NAFTA, I mean, they're fighting about immigration in Congress with the president, and they fight and they fight and they fight. NAFTA caused our immigration problem to get extremely worse. And that's what's going to happen with these new trade deals. So we can see the show that they put on.
The whose problem? You know, right? I mean, I'm segueing. I mean, Rich was saying that the problem of this kind of immigration, of desperate economic immigration, whether it be in America or in Europe now, is a humongous issue going on too, and on all over the world, and internally too, in China, right? When the 800 million people who are left out of the loop are trying to, you know, come back, to come and immigrate to the urban areas. So even internally you have that. And you even have internal hatreds like that too, by the way, where who are these filthy peasants coming in? On the other hand, it's to the benefit of stuff. We don't have any immigration. The elites that are pushing for this same agreements are actually very happy. We talked about it in previous shows. They're extremely happy with these desperate immigrants coming from Mexico and other parts of in America, especially Latin America, because our economy is very significantly depends on it. Mm-hmm. Again, not us.
About the trade agreement.
Right. We don't really. I mean, we benefit to a point. We have to acknowledge that we do benefit, but it wasn't really our choice. The prime benefit, of course, gushes up to the top where the wealth goes. So it's very important always to pay attention to whose interests are at question here. Some people are benefiting, otherwise we wouldn't do it.
Well, and when we talk about immigration, we talk about what they want us to talk about, what they're pushing through the media. What happens when folks start leaving their communities to move on to greener pastures, when they start leaving, then we've got a vacuum in that community. Mm-hmm. Now soon we've got a ghost town. Now the corporations can go repossess that area and claim those natural resources. Mm-hmm. So it's an attack 360 on the earth, on the people. It affects all of us.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. I mean, this is another thing that used to be complete taboo in America. So I'm going positive all of a sudden, right? Just like the Occupy movement and all that, we can actually talk about income distribution. What, a decade ago, talk about income distribution? They were not even progressives talked about income distribution. It had to be like communists talked about it. And whatever you think, I mean, I recently came back from a bunch of very distinguished right-wingers, but not idiots, like smart ones, you know, that you can have constructive discussions with. And they were, you know, they were concerned with these issues too, in a different manner. They proposed different solutions. We had very good arguments, precisely in the sense that I questioned some of the things that seemed obvious to me, and you know, and maybe they too some. But the latest thing that needs to be put up there and allowed to discuss, not as a dirty word, is class warfare.
Oh yeah, we are under assault. Here's a good statistic. 85, the richest 85 people in the world control as much wealth as the bottom 3.5, and that bottom number may have went up since I read that.
Yeah.
That elite, that economic elite class, they know for a fact that we're involved in a vicious class war because they're the ones perpetuating it.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is the 99%. We don't quite get it across the board yet, and we're too content to fight each other
for the scraps.
Yeah, for the scraps from the table. But those elites, they're unified. You see what happened yesterday. Granted, I think it was 84%. Maybe 74% of Democratic senators did vote against it, but they got just enough. They bought off just enough people to get that deciding vote. Yeah. You know, so
that's how it's done, isn't it?
Exactly.
So the
system itself is completely controlled by them as well. You know, the political process. I mean, you can't look at. You can't research it for 5 minutes without that being known to you. Money in politics spells it out quite clearly right there.
That's actually called investment theory of politics. Mm-hmm. I can't think of who, I'm so awful with names. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. I always tell even students, you know, I remember your face. I remember what paper you wrote for me, but your name, just forget it. It's something in my brain. I blame my mom, you know?
And personally, I this goes back to, you know, what do we do if or when this passes, you know, because they want us frustrated.
In one shape or another.
Yeah, they want us frustrated. They want us, you know, distraught. You know, they want us to be, you know, to throw our hands in the air and just give up. And because then when we stop fighting, then they do whatever they want. You know, That's when it's really over. The second we quit fighting, you know, maybe, I've had people tell me, you know, you're just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. You're trying to save a sinking ship. And my response is, you know what? Maybe you're right. But what am I going to do? Am I going to sit in my room and hide? Am I going to just, you know, not do anything while people are dying in mass all over the world, you know, because of these agreements?
No, you're gonna get in line and sit down, turn on your TV.
No, yeah.
Am I just going to go to work and work for
increasingly lower wages to buy increasingly more expensive shit that I don't freaking need? You know what I mean? That's the only other alternative.
Oops.
You know? Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm too far. Yeah, big apologies.
I'm sorry. That's my fault. Stuff that we just don't need. There's a complete distraction from, you know, the actual world that we live in that's being written behind our backs every day.
Though maybe we can. I mean, again, I mean, just because you know how we are. We go chaotic completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm always very hesitant about...
Okay,
I'm so not hippie, right? I'm punk,
out.
Right? It's my generation. So I'm always like in that sense of, I don't want to go off the grid. Mm-hmm. I love my toys. Mm-hmm. I'm the first guy who responds to that mailer about faster broadband connection.
But that's the thing, you know. It's one thing to have things, but when you dedicate all your focus and ignore what's really happening, that's when it becomes a problem.
Right, right.
You know, it's one thing to be a well-rounded person and have, you know, other interests, but, you know, when you completely ignore the very things that are governing everyone's lives, you know, in favor of, you know, what star did this week or what movie's coming out or I didn't quite like the plot line. I thought, you know, there's whole discussions. People dedicate their whole lives to these things.
The mental energy, right?
I have to say, though, if you love your toys, you have to be aware that it's possible under if TPP passes, unlocked iPhones will become
illegal.
The
quality
illegal.
Will go down.
No, they'll be illegal. You will not be allowed to unlock the technology.
The package of the quality of the technology will the package, including the conditions, you know, and the quality of the speeds of our internet, you know, because, and this is like a major fundamental economic point on which the right and the left that aren't idiots. It has to be said.
Sensible people
that understand their own position. You see, I'm not criticizing that. Just understand what you're talking about, right? Are in agreement about this. Competition. If we believe that capitalism is not doomed, so if we're not like real hardcore Marxists, right? It's a pretty small minority around the world. Well, depends where, but still a pretty minority. If there is a view that, market system is a pretty good system. It's salvageable at the very least. We can fix it, which is, you know, probably the majority position on the planet. You must encourage competition. I mean, Adam Smith knew it in the 18th century. You know, all the problem is when powerful people usurp it. It's all about power. And you'll be shocked that the discipline of economics since roughly the World Wars era, right? The mainstream economics, the stuff that's in that textbook that many people were forced to go over, you know, that horrible thing, which about 80% is BS, I can say that, scientifically, not my opinion, just silly, yeah? Nobody should believe that, because just like the earth is round, you know, it's wrong. Ignore all that. Power. You guys were talking about it. All this stuff, you know, you learn economics sufficiently, they beat it out of they test it out of your brain. So you begin to believe these notions, or at the very least repeat that in some kind of ideal global order, market-based, with free-flowing everything and competition and opportunity. Hell, if that was the deal, I'd sign. But that's not the deal.
The deal is they can sell to us, but we can't sell each other. Like, still with your personal devices, you're not, like, you're done with your phone. You're ready to go upgrade and get the brand new iPhone. You can't go on Craigslist under TPP and sell your phone.
No.
That's illegal. They don't want us selling our phones to each other. They don't want grandma giving the son the phone. What they want is grandma has to go down to the store and buy a brand new phone.
And you know, there's a lot of rhetoric out there about how these things will help, you know, help the middle class and, you know, help, you know, workers and things like that. I was listening to a debate on Democracy Now! This morning, and they had a person from the Cato Institute that was spewing all this nonsense. And, you know, these trade deals, they don't help the, you know, the small farmer in developing countries. They don't help the small business owner in the United States. Mm-hmm. They help and they empower only the multinational corporation. And what do those do? They crush the small business owner. They run them out of town. They crush the poor farmer that's just trying to feed his family and make a little cash on the side in other countries. You know, they crush all these things. So that all that rhetoric is just completely.
And why wouldn't they?
It's completely.
You know,
false.
That's another problematic that somehow that I think most of the middle ground shares, certainly in America and Europe, too, maybe all over the world, that somehow powerful people will do the right thing for some obscure reason.
And
really, I mean, it's a complete denial of you know, thousands of years of history, even in very different environments. They have to be somehow controlled, you know? I mean, feudalism worked better even in the Middle Ages when you had a bunch of aristocrats, never mind the peasants, right? Tough. But you had barons. Just recently we celebrated the Magna Carta. It was all about the fact that a bunch of rich, greedy feudal lords didn't want to have one rich, greedy guy at the top. They wanted to share the spoils. Not exactly an ideal world, perhaps, but better. You
know? I believe, was it the 600th anniversary?
What is it, 1213, if I remember from my...
Right, it was... It was just, I believe, last week, and the day of the anniversary, everyone was tweeting about the Magna Carta, and then the next day, they rushed this trans promotion authority bill through the House and tried to get a vote on the Senate that night on it. So here we have, and it's funny, one of the British leaders has come out speaking that we need to start talking about putting the Magna Carta back in place because of the erosion of rights.
Oh, much of it, by the way, wasn't enacted immediately. Was ignored right off the bat. In ways, in some sense, again, it's not that different than today. You know, we think, I mean, you know, the toys were different. Instead of toying with all my tablets here and stuff, I'd be toying with, I don't know, an iron mace or something. but still, yeah, it was, the dynamics are there. There are different interest groups. Right-wingers, you know, more, don't like to call it class warfare because class is so strongly associated with, you know, Marxism, the left. They call it interest groups. Like hard conservative George Mason right people. Actually, you know, it's one another problem. People don't mix and match. I seek out people with opposing opinions because I have better conversations with them. So, you know, hardcore James Buchanan, you know, Southern Alabama Nobel Prize, which was an accomplishment because Alabamans don't get positions in Northeast Ivy League. It's certainly not in the 70s. Yeah? He's still alive. You know, they have criticisms. In fact, I discovered this world by trying to understand how come the government is so messed up, because at some point in my life, my liberalism kind of cracked when I realized my government is not going to solve it because they don't want to solve it. They're not trying to solve my problems. They're in the pockets of powerful people. And that is a fundamental problem. But it's a process, and thanks to kind of, you know, this kind of things, kind of talking about it and then rabble raising could help.
Right. And I mean, and right now, like what we're seeing is, we've been aware of TPP activists across the country have been, working on this for a couple years. But since January, over $200 million in political contributions have come from the U.S. Business Coalition for TPP into the representatives and senators' political campaigns. So from January to March, they pumped almost over $200 million. Who knows how much more they've pumped in since then. So I'm at the point that if our politicians aren't going to listen to the letters and the petitions and the calls and the people showing up in their groups and the unions and that this U.S. Business Coalition for TPP that is buying their votes, well, if our money's not good enough for financial donations, I don't think our money's good enough for these corporations either. It's time to hit the sponsors of these bills that are buying off our elected officials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really, at the end of the day, that's the only thing they care about. I mean, the whole neoliberal capital system is based on profit at the cost of any and all. That's the bottom line. That's what they care about, is their profits.
That's to put potentially, and again, I'm putting my conservative hat on a little bit in the sense. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's precisely something that, again, it's crazy how in America today, I don't have to bring like Karl Marx or anybody to criticize the system. Adam Smith is, you know, father of the market system is good enough because he's spinning in, you know, at supersonic speeds in his grave, if that works out. So he actually in his books, was very much concerned that this new bourgeois kind of middle class, small business, innovation, this modern world, coming to be is going to be destroyed, by these powerful individuals and groups that are not accountable, right? So the notion that, yeah, sure, the CEO is, whether because they themselves have no empathy and are a psychopath, or more often than not, you know, the system is such that if they all of a sudden develop a social consciousness of some kind, through religion, philosophy, or whatever, they will be fired by the stock owners. So it's a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. So we can't wait for kind master, if you will, right? We can't wait for kind master. We must assume that master is not kind, and make sure that it's accountable. That's the whole notion of a market-based democracy that worked overall reasonably well, historically speaking, for a good while.
And another layer in that whole beautiful mess that you just described is these CEOs serving on each other's boards. Mm-hmm. And that's who's making the decisions for the company. But if I'm serving on 10 boards and I'm also an elected official, you know, I mean, it's...
Interesting. I mean, it's separate. And in that sense, you know, you were saying about conspiracy theory, and this comes up a lot because so much of it eventually, you know, it's a fine line between knowing what the hell's going on and conspiracy theory sometimes, isn't it? It's a big advantage that the real movers and shakers are less known. Right? I mean, these are not household names. So the elected officials typically are pretty powerful and certainly pretty rich by, you know, they're way up there within the 1%, but none of them is in the 0.001%. No. Those few tens of thousands. It's hard to give numbers on this. Like, you know, as a professional, I'm always loath to give numbers because I know how much you can doctor them, right? But the few tens of thousands of people, maybe 100,000, maybe 200,000 that control the world. Oh my God, here we are, right? We think of that underground base in some, you know, Marvel show, you know, like... No. It's out in the open. You can look it up.
They're very blatant about the whole thing. Right.
Well, but you don't know their names. These are not the people sitting in the actual politicians. They're kind of front layer, in a sense, enacting the policies often.
I mean, like right now, you can see across the board. Last night, it was reported in the media. And it was a consistent message that TPA has passed. I understand what they're saying. They have the votes to pass it today. But yesterday was a procedural vote. So if, you know, conspiracy theory, I understand, I laugh at some of them too, but look through the news last night. Everyone reported that TPA passed. And that doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen instantaneously by accident. Mm-hmm. Because when they did the cloture vote on either Thursday or Friday, there was no news about it because the cloture vote was so confusing.
It's a bit like the tax code. So confusing. Only billionaires can really get the advantage because they have enough interest in the tax system to employ a bunch of professionals to break it down for them.
And to add on to what she was saying just then, until really the last, this has been under negotiation since Bush. The Trans-Pacific Partnership was started under, that specific one was started under George Bush's administration.
Well,
it was included a small number of countries, but
to like clarify, there was a small pack of four or five Pacific nations, mm-hmm. and he entered the pack.
Right.
And now it has expanded and developed into the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
And I say that to kind of emphasize how long it's been going on, how long these negotiations have actually been happening. And it wasn't even really until maybe a year and a half ago that you started seeing anything about it in the mainstream press. You know, most of the information we were getting was just bits and pieces, you know, some little bit of rhetoric here, but most of the stuff we were getting was from, you know, the information was through leaked documents, you know, and other citizen groups that were out there trying to fight against it, that, you know, just trying to push the information out there.
It would be like the main guys with the information is going to be Public Citizen. Mm-hmm. They came together as organizers fighting NAFTA 20 years mm-hmm. ago. Mm-hmm. So they're now a full-fledged organization. If you're looking for studies, actual numbers to research what these politicians are trying to sell with these trade deals, that's a great resource for you. It is a little bit of, it'll take about a day or two to get used to their website, but you're mm-hmm. looking for the links on the trade deals, globalization. They've got a lot of good information.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's possible that, you know, that that powerful interests will find that, there's too much. We wanted to keep it quiet. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's not as quiet as was. In fact, it's surprisingly and wonderfully not so quiet. Right. The American majority is against it. Mm-hmm. Of course, the opinions of the American people, recently statistically rather thoroughly proven in the Princeton study, mm-hmm. have zero impact.
Zero
impact on actual policy. Zero. Mm-hmm. So right. A lot of people, by the way, immediately say, wait a minute, that how could it be zero?
Yeah.
And usually what everybody pulls correctly and smartly, how about gay marriage? Look. They kind of had to, we're still pushing, you know, the majority of Americans, the younger they are, the more, this is an exception. This is a case in which, in my view, I'm very happy about it. But the reason why gay marriage is making such progress is not American opinion, it's money.
Mm-hmm. Right. If I can add to that study, that it was 0.0 when their interests were against the interest of big business. When the interests are the same, but that just shows you they always side with big business.
That doesn't happen often, you know.
Be honest, you know, there's a lot there, like you just said, there's a lot of money. Not, I agree, you know, anybody should be able to marry, you know, a person they want, as long as there's no harm or coercion in it. What is it my decision to tell anybody else what to feel, you know? But
it's a happy occurrence.
You can't deny the facts that there. It's great that it's happening, but there's also a lot of big interest backing it up.
It was the rare, beautiful thing mm-hmm. in which it so happens that you know, the it doesn't affect the class war. On the contrary,
and
not an issue.
It foments dividing the 99%
Absolutely.
Because it brings religion into
Absolutely.
It. It brings my personal preferences into mm-hmm. it. And then I'm going to sit there and get emotional talking to you about it.
Absolutely.
What it really comes down to is not do they have the right to marry or do they not have the right to marry. I mean, anyone can join together in a household. It comes down to the tax codes.
Mm-hmm.
Does my domestic partner get a tax break if I cover them on my health insurance?
Well,
that's
also,
the
like,
true
you know, with
issue.
Kids and health care. I mean, there's a lot of limits
you
when you're not married.
If the person dies.
Right. If your domestic domestic partner has children, you're not only paying taxes on their coverage, you're paying taxes on their children's coverage as well. So there's a lot of tax issues and paperwork issues. My partner passed away, but I can't make arrangements for them. That's the issue, but we can't talk about that. We got to talk about the emotional words that divide us as the 99%.
And like when it comes to the trade agreements, you know, you guys are doing, you know, sending documents and we'll share everything that, you know, I'll post meticulously.
Mm-hmm.
But the misinformation is tremendous. I mean, mm-hmm. we're all very busy.
Right.
It's hard to find the time to, and some of this is just monstrously complicated. Yeah. I mean, really. So it's impossible to understand. There's a lot of this actually elitist rhetoric often, you know, that's like, oh yeah, yeah, people want choice in healthcare. My brain goes all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, people want choice in healthcare. We don't want to limit people's choice in healthcare. But when you look at the details, you find that it's impossible to find out. I mean, I'll never forget when we had our change in healthcare, and actually we have a really, really generous, some of the best kind of standard coverage here. I mean, people come to work in Rawlins often. Well, academics, we have our own interests, but you know, staff come here often, not for the pay, which is normal, but for the benefit package, right? Mm-hmm. So having said that, when that, as everything else slowly but surely erodes and you get all these choices, right, mm-hmm. In air quotes that you can't hear on the radio, a whole bunch, like we were like 12 of us in the international business and economics department, we were like looking at the information we were sent and we couldn't figure it out. Mm-hmm. We totally kind of eyeballed it, basically, because it was impossible. I mean, we were educated enough to realize that there's no way to figure out what's the good choice. and it continues. I mean, is Obamacare maybe a marginal improvement on what we had there before? I'm conceding that. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Except when you're thinking that that has shut the door for the next 100 years. In that case, it's not a good thing.
And it kills me to hear Obamacare, because that's another bill that he had nothing to do about but attaching his name, mm-hmm. Obamacare, mm-hmm. another way to divide the 99%.
Sure. And the thing then is, you support that Obama bill, immediately, and if that's a problem for you for multiple reasons, right, then yeah.
When you talk about the right to choose, and that if the law is the law, any corporation has to meet the minimum requirements of the law. The choice is an illusion.
What? You're kidding me? Excuse me?
They may or may not be enforced.
Our biggest financial, most powerful people in the world, the people who literally kind of call the White House in the morning and tell them, mm-hmm. okay, listen up, this is what you're going to do. Somebody comes to mind immediately, the greatest crook in human history. I mean, that's quite a distinction that, you know, deserves some respect, right? Jamie Dimon. Mm-hmm. I mean, they steal billions of dollars from the American public, and yep. they get a small kind of fine, like a service fee, you mm-hmm. know, and they get a raise for it. You know? I mean, so I'm just, but you know what? This is pre-market. This is the kind of world that European world and other parts too. I'm sadly most educated in Europe by the nature of the beast, right? Of how we're being taught in schools, but that's what kind of started to change a little bit, like in the late 1600s, early 1700s. It allowed us to have this world that we're so happy, the market world, liberties, all of those things, American Revolution, French Revolution, all those things, where rule of law, the fact that you're a big aristocrat doesn't mean you can do anything you want. Mm-hmm. That used to be the case. People didn't question it. Right. It didn't like walk in the street, all of a sudden somebody, you know, who's not an aristocrat, looks at you funny, you run them through with a sword. There's no problem. Mm-hmm. So this rule of law thing is eroding rapidly today. Mm-hmm. And that's an extremely scary element. And on the other hand, what is lacking that we used to have in many civilizations, and certainly in feudal times, was the responsibility of the master, right? The master may have been, you know, whatever he was, but he couldn't just, like, discard, you know, work to death and discard his peasants, or he would be hungry too. So you had the responsibility. Sure, he lived better. Sure, he wrote, you know, if it was Japan feudalism, cut a couple of heads every day just to keep the peasant in place, right? Mm-hmm. But still had to manage the system in a functional way.
You've mentioned rule of law, and I would like to, that brings us to a really good point about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and really the other trade agreements as well. Probably the most dangerous part of these agreements that I can see is the investor-state dispute settlement system. Mm. Under this system, multinational corporations can sue member nations at the federal, local, state level if those nations or even cities or towns in those nations choose to enact a law, say an environmental protection, you know, say an anti-fracking law. They can be sued by these multinational corporations, and it wouldn't be tried under a traditional court system like the rule of law, you know, should be. It would be tried under a
A tribunal of corporate lawyers. It will not be on domestic soil. Mm-hmm. It will be on foreign soil.
And many of these arbitrators, they make $600-$700 an hour, so they have no interest in wrapping them up. As Carolina said earlier, publiccitizen.org is an amazing resource on researching previous settlements under these kind of laws. Billions and billions of dollars. Ecuador just terminated a an agreement they had with the Occidental Oil Company, even though it was legal, they were sued under the ISDS system, and they had to pay $2.3 billion because this company was poisoning their land and destroying their ecosystem. And they under threat had to either redo the agreement or pay $2.3 billion to this corporation. And now these amounts that they will seek will be far worse than anything we've seen before under previous agreements, because what's new to the Trans-Pacific Partnership in these three agreements that are coming up that they want to use fast track to just ram through is they are now based, the settlements can be based on expected future profits. Yeah. Which is basically just them picking a number out of the hat and saying, hey, this would cost us $5 billion if you want to ban fracking in the United States. And that will have a chilling effect on lawmakers, to where they won't even try to start passing these laws. Mm-hmm. They'll just know already that they'll get sued, so they'll quit. And it really gives multinational corporations complete control over our domestic laws.
Like it has been.
Right.
In the poor world.
Right, exactly.
Since a long time.
Exactly, and that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, in the United States, we typically feel the least brunt of these agreements. You know, places like Mexico felt a lot harder hit than, you know, as bad as it was for people here under NAFTA, Mexico was decimated. You know, places like, I think you said Malaysia is a tier three nation.
Well, you know, we're talking about rule of law. Where has America stood historically as an example to the rest of the world? You know, with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, one of the elected officials tried to add an amendment to the bill that the Senate is voting on today, TPA, that would confirm that we will not do business with any tier three nations. And what we're talking about here is tier three nations with human trafficking, which is the modern name for slavery. These nations, right, other nations that are in this group is, we're talking Iran and it's South Korea, right? Okay. Yep. And I get South Korea and North Korea mixed up. I have to admit it.
South actually is a special case a little bit in South, because they were primed to be another colony.
Mm-hmm. So,
and they fought for it and won.
who's on this list that's in the Trade Pacific Partnership? Malaysia. So when this amendment was introduced, the White House made it quite clear it is not acceptable. We have to have Malaysia in this. So we're going to start legalizing not only trading, preferential trading with a nation that deals with human trafficking. At the same time, we will also start competing with those slaves for our jobs. This is not a joke. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is the vision for the future. It might be 20 years for these things to be implemented. It might be 30, but they're laying the groundwork now. The other thing that has to be mentioned is what's in this Trade Pacific Partnership. We only have bits and pieces. What we know is scary enough, but we only have a few chapters. And you talked about Obamacare. WikiLeaks just released the healthcare chapter a few weeks ago. Surgical procedures are now going to be patented. So when you and these are going to be procedures that there are a lot of specifics, whether they're using like technology to do the procedure. So your procedure that you got to go get an operation, and it might cost you $3,000 today under the current rules. Once they put a patent on it, it's not going to cost you $3,000. There's a lot of things going on all across the board. And I think they've counted on that, because for us to go out in the streets and try to talk about TPP. It's so confusing with the few things we do have. But the truth is, we really only have the tip of the iceberg of what's in these documents.
Mm-hmm. Hence, I mean, I think really the way sometimes it's very important. I'm Smithian here. Yeah, specialize in trade. So some of us do learn different aspects. We can't all become experts. And often the big experts see only the trees and don't no longer see the forest. So we need somebody who maybe doesn't know all the details, but can see the forest. And in that spirit, this could be a strong argument, I think, that's very compelling and non-ideological, is that, you know, the so-called West, and of course you can add Japan and South Korea to that, so in Australia, which are the rich world, yeah, has been, and that club has changed over the years, obviously, mm-hmm. right, has benefited tremendously from colonizing, enslaving, raiding, whatever the case may be, exploiting different versions and flavors to it of the poor world. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, they bought off, you know, the majority, the working class, mm-hmm. the middle class in the rich world that way. Because, okay, we won't be treated like that, right? So eventually, after a lot of struggles and unions and a lot of communists who deserve the credit here because they fought that fight, mm-hmm. you know, we no longer, we could send our kids to schools, not down the mine when they're five, right? We get 2-week holiday, right? We work standard 8 hours, not 12. All of those, wonderful things that really make civilization be worth it, right? All of that struggle, they could afford it by not really extending these benefits, you know, in the mining communities or raw materials, etc. We're a little bit running out of that resource. And I view some of these developments, including the topic that you're focusing on right now, this big extended, globally spanning, multiple free trade, in quotation, agreements, as really, we're cannibalizing ourselves now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As the world becomes global.
It's snake eating its own tail.
It's not, you know, powerful rich Americans are more, in some sense, are with in the same interest group, to use the more libertarian language in this case, with wealthy Chinese, Malaysians, everywhere, even the poorest country in the world have rich kind of people. They're mm-hmm. usually in charge. They understand each other. They feel that they have similar interests, right? More than the interests of the poor or, you know, less fortunate in their own countries. In some sense, if the economy is global, nation states don't really matter much anymore. Once again, medieval, we had these changes, you know? A lot of people don't know this. I know my students do because I, you know, bang them over the head every week with it. I mean, the concept of a nation state, like France, United States, Holland, Malaysia, right? It's much younger than the Magna Carta. A generation after that. And it's like 700 years old. They used to not be that, mm-hmm. right? They were private, held land of aristocrats.
Right.
In bits of all over the place, right? So the world used to be different, and it's changing again. Now, the thing is, let me float this balloon and see what you think. I mean, a lot of people, and even I sometimes am willing to go there. This could be done right. We could have, a reasonably functioning market-based system, even globe-hugging. You know, maybe it's a good thing to get rid of nations. Imagine peace. Right? If we don't fight each other. Look, Europe was kind of supposed to be that idea, for example. If we stick France and Germany and together so closely that they can't hit each other because it hurts to both.
Well, one of the most popular TV shows, Star Trek.
Yeah, United Federation of Planets.
And you know the love the 99% has for that show because it represents what we want for our future. But that's what's happening now is not what Star Trek talked about.
It's the argument between free trade and fair trade, you know. Is it mm-hmm. bottom-up globalization where, you know, people all over the world connect to each other and sell their goods to each other? Is it, you know,
competitively,
yes,
according to kind of capitalistic,
right,
market principles?
Or is it, you know, when you look at the classic definition of fascism, at least coming out of Italy, it's the marriage of corporate and state power. Yeah. And that's what these free trade agreements are. It's corporate power absurding, you know, state power and basically controlling it in all of these nations. It is the definition of fascism. So it's handed down from the top. This is not what we need. You know, this is, like you said, it could be done right, but not instituted and forced down our throats, hidden behind closed doors. We won't even be able to see the Trans-Pacific Partnership text until 5 years after it's signed. So for 5 years, every member nation will be living under laws that they have no idea what they even are. Mm-hmm. Think about that.
And these are the laws they can't get through Congress.
Yes.
That's why there's 29 chapters, mm-hmm, to TPP, when trade and treaty is really just, should be just a few chapters. These are the things they can't get. That's why it's secret. That's why the public can't see it. Paul Ryan, that helped write the current bill, they're floating the talking points. Oh, well, Congress, mm-hmm, will still have a say if we give the president trade promotion authority. They'll still get to do a yay or nay vote. Once TPP hits their floor for a vote, they have 60 days to do it. There is no way they can complete all the studies of impact on this trade treaty or trade agreement before they do a yay or nay vote. So that yay or nay vote is meaningless. It's not going to have the information when they do it, and it's symbolic. Everything we see in the media and what's been the circus that they've played in Congress the last couple weeks, it's very clear that they're probably going to be passing TPA today. They're probably going to be passing TPP. I just want to say real quick, because it is 3 o'clock, if you haven't had a chance to contact Senator Nelson, who is here for our local representative out of Orlando, his Orlando phone number is 407-872-7161. His Washington, D.C. number is 202-224-5274. We still have time to call right now.
Yeah, so if you want to make your voice heard, and again, you know, it's maybe it's probably not gonna help, but you know, big
stand
issues
up
like
and
that,
register your discontent.
It'll take decades for us to save America and the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the best case scenario.
Well, if you do a Twitter search on hashtag TPA and you see the conversations going back and forth, Tea Partiers and staunch Democrats are talking to each other.
Right.
They're noticing what their elected representatives are. And I'm starting to see I'm done supporting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to push him anymore. I'm done supporting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this conversation is going to change much faster than they realize.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention too that, you know, so many of these, representatives are staunch, you know, constitutionalists, that voted for TPA. Well, there's TPA flies in the face of the Constitution, wildly in the face of the Constitution. First of all, Paul Ryan saying that TPA will give Congress consent. Congress already, according to the Constitution, only Congress shall enact these trade agreements. They will have advice and consent and a 2/3 majority from Congress to pass these things. Mm-hmm. So TPA actually gives away what is already in the Constitution is what they're allowed to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's, the power is already theirs. So by voting for TPA, they give away their power.
Huh?
So him saying that could not be more of a lie, more disingenuous.
Well, that's definitely in character.
Yeah.
And with that little bit of hate, I think we have to do the top of the hour.
Just the fact that these have been negotiated behind Congress's back is...
No. We'll pick it up right there.
And you have been listening to WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the Best in Basement Radio. And we'll be right back with some more Punkonomics here on your favorite station.
Yep,
there we go.
What's that?
WPRK is supported in part by Plush Recording Studios. where Orlando makes music that the world loves to listen to. Plush Studios offers rentable studio time and the help of a professional team of audio engineers who have worked on projects with such artists as Paramore, Shinedown,